Previously on Popping Collars.
And maybe that's what's happening with Beyonce with Lemonade right now. You know, obviously she has a message that she wants to say. She's using music to say it. But if it were someone other than Beyonce, would it be as compelling? Would it be as talked about? Would it be in the zeitgeist like it is?
No, that's my one word contribution to the podcast.
No.
No. I'm failing miserably.
No.
No.
Welcome to Popping Collars, the podcast that lives at the intersection between religion and pop culture. I'm your host. My name is Greg Knight. I am in Palm Beach, Florida. With me is my co-host, Betsy Gonzalez from Alexandria, Virginia. Hello, Betsy.
Hey, Greg.
And we have a couple of special guests this time. From Bennington, Vermont, it's Heather Kern Lanier. Welcome, Heather.
Hello. Welcome. Thank you.
And from Oakland, California, we have Stephen McHale. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Greg. It's actually Alameda, California.
Oh, you're in Alameda?
Yeah.
You're on the island?
We bought a house here 2 years ago.
This is episode 40 of the 1,198th ranked podcast in the iTunes spirituality category. And our topic today is children and technology. A disclaimer up front, this topic is not meant to exclude anyone who is not a parent. We all happen to be parents on this show, but everyone, I think, participates in a culture where children are marketed to directly with specific brands, including television like Sesame Street, music like Kid Bops, apps like YouTube Kids, and a whole host of animated movies. So when it comes to children, I think all of us live in a place of expectation and reality. So to kick things off, I'm curious, what were your expectations of how your children would interact with technology before they were born and pop culture, and what has the reality been for you?
Well, Greg.
Yeah, Steven. Kick it off.
So when we had our first child, we did not own a TV, and we were really self-righteous about that. And I thought that we would raise a child who would never even know the glow of a television screen. But since then, of course, you know, TV and digital media have merged, and we now have two TVs. And now our children scream at us for Netflix movies. So my reality has not been at all what I expected.
Yeah, the phone thing. See, that's been the biggest thing for me, is seeing how intuitive the phone apps and just the phone like navigation is for like a one-year-old.
Yeah.
That blew my mind, I think.
I had a flip phone. You know, so it was like the first like real digital thing she liked was remember those flip video cameras? And so,
oh, yeah, mm-hmm. We still have one of
like,
those.
Totally, right?
But that provides our best video footage.
She would be around, right? But I would film her, and then she would grab it, and she'd be like, pictures, I want to see the pictures. And so she would just sit there and stare at video of herself. And it reminds me, there's a Wim Wenders movie called like Until the End of the World. And people begin to be able to record their dreams in the movie. And they get so lost in just watching these recordings of their own dreams that they just kind of get lost and have to kind of be rescued from that hole. So every time she would cradle the flip thing in her hands, pictures, and I'm like, oh no, she's gone, I've lost her. But, you know, then the smartphones and that kind of stuff started. I also thought that I was going to be really good about limit and what's available, how much time, and I find that sometimes mom is just tired.
Yeah, I remember thinking like the sort of the phrase like you shouldn't use television as a babysitter. Like that'd be a horrible thing to do.
Yeah,
like put your kid.
That is advice from people who are not parents.
Yeah, right. So you know, like don't put. So I had this vision prior to having kids that like people were plopping their children in front of TVs and like walking away, and TV was babysitter. We don't actually own a TV in our house now, but that's, it doesn't matter because we have 1,000 screens upon which the kids can watch whatever. So that was my thought. Like, you know, of course I wouldn't use TV as a babysitter, and it affects their brain poorly because the images are coming so fast at them. And so it'll change their attention span. And then But what happened was that she just sort of changed all my expectations of parenting because she has this chromosomal deletion, because she has multiple disabilities. She had trouble gaining weight, she had trouble eating, and when she was about one and something, she was still bottle fed, and she got really sick. And I was like, well, she's so sick, I need to do something with her that will like help her eat, because she's not eating and she's sick, and that's just going to make things worse. And a lot of kids with her syndrome have G-tubes that are fed through their gut. Which is fine, but I was hoping to avoid that. So we just started, like, she started watching Yo Gabba Gabba while she was eating, or while she was drinking milk, which is this, like, a really annoying and wonderful show. And it's the only way now that I know anything about pop culture, because if the band has been on Yo Gabba Gabba, then I know who they are. So she started watching this show, and then it just, we dawned on us that if she watched television, this child who was, like, chronically orally defensive, diagnosed as failure to thrive, you know, all these things, not in any way on the growth chart, she would eat twice as many calories. So TV was what we did. She watches TV still while she eats.
You could say that about America in general.
So it worked in her favor as a person who's 20 pounds and 5 years old. So everything just changed, you know. It was like I was no longer thinking about making like the perfect super intellectual brain in my child. I was just trying to keep my child eating orally. So much of my parenting is like that. It's like the things that I thought I would do are very different because I have a child with such different needs. But then I could go back to this idea of like the babysitter thing, right? I totally use TV as a babysitter in the sense that there is nobody around us. We have no family. If I need to go and make dinner for 30 minutes, I need someone to watch my kids. And Elmo does an excellent job of that. So it works out to everyone's advantage because my children stop terrorizing each other. They stop fighting. They stare at Elmo, who's teaching something, you know, something about teeth or cheeks. There's a lot of face part episodes with Elmo. And then I make chili. So I've gone from like, of course, no one should use TV as a babysitter to like, if you're a working parent, you have two parents who are working and you have no support system and you've got no village, and so TV is the safest babysitter I've got and the cheapest too. So
I was going to say we're now we've entered the other side of the issue, which is pressure from my kids' peers to be active in digital stuff, mostly Minecraft and other video games. So I am able to fulfill my wish to raise my children as, you know, nerdy little troglodytes, because my son talks about Minecraft all the time, but we don't do it at home. So it's sort of like theoretical Minecraft. Well, personally, my insecurity is that he'll be ostracized because every other boy in his class plays that game.
Yeah, we've also talked about that too, that she would be on the same wavelength with everybody else, or that others would be developing the skills that you do develop through those games, that she wouldn't have access to that. Maybe it's been 2 years, maybe a year and a half since she started doing it, and it was initially a very addictive, dangerous thing for mommy to try to do, because I started doing it and it was like, oh, this is quite the time suck. I could do this all day long.
I've built three houses.
This is awesome. You know, so
I'm a Minecraft god.
Yes, exactly. You know, and we play a lot of creative mode. She's not really into the survival part as much. It's much more the creative construction and building something and designing something. She has the books, and so she's read the books and the different things that she could build, and seeing all these fantastic other things other people have built, and could I model something that looks like that? And that creative aspect has been a great outlet. We don't do any of the networking parts. She is very reticent about anything that has a texting component, a networking component, and I'm also very reticent about those as well. She also does not want to text with her friends, that she says, I'm not old enough for that. And so it's just something that she's kind of putting the brakes on. And I'm not going to, after living here with a bunch of high school students, I don't want to get her into that too soon personally.
I have no idea what Minecraft is, but it's not Minesweeper.
You're going to love it, Heather.
Oh, whenever people say it, I just think of Minesweeper, that ridiculous game where you just like click on the things and try to avoid the little black mine.
Yeah.
But it doesn't sound like that's what you're describing.
There was a piece in the New York Times recently, and I can't say from experience, but it was describing Minecraft as the new Legos, like the common ground that our children will share in terms of construction blocks.
I think that's right. I think that's a good thing to bring up, this idea of like pop culture touchstones for kids, because that starts so early. I don't think I was prepared for like how early these pop culture items would come into my kids' lives. I remember being at the hospital after the girls were born, and they had like Sesame Street newborn diapers, and I was like, huh. Right away, yeah. We're doing the Sesame Street thing. And then, you know, of course, like the whole like Disney industry, like the Mickey Minnie stuff, like they're so aware at such an early age, my girls anyway, of like who these characters are and kind of what they represent and what the differences are between them. And it's amazing to me how quickly that indoctrination happens and how widespread it is. You know, how it reaches so many children.
Isn't that because you live in Florida?
Okay, the Disney thing, maybe.
You do, like, day trips to Disney World, for God's sake. You are a full participant.
Don't shame me and my Disney participation.
Betsy, he goes for himself.
I'm with you. Yeah, he does.
Look, when I say I work at a church, what I mean is the Church of the Mouse.
Of course you do. Well, yeah, we early on said, okay, like, because some other mom that I had talked to was doing this. I'm like, okay, I like this. I don't want my kid to be a walking advertisement for anything. So I was like, okay, so I'm not going to buy any clothes that have like Elmo or Dora or whatever on them, right? And I'll get the diapers that don't have, you know, anything on them either. And so that kind of has gone on. And still goes on. She doesn't really seek out those clothes in that kind of way, you know. But however, we have gotten the occasional now, like Batman T-shirt or like other things like that, that she actually has an affinity for, as opposed to something that I'm picking before she cares about it to throw it on her body.
We are full on into Elsa and Anna in my house.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like I sort of opened the jar of snakes and the heads of Anna and Elsa were on them, and they just have spread all over. Like, there's just a jar of Anna and Elsa snakes all over my house. And I did it, like, I knew what I was doing. I was like, okay, Frozen, you can come in. You can come in now, and now it's everywhere.
That's so perfect, because that's what we talk about on our show a lot, is this idea of you like what you like, and there's so much pop culture out there that you can find what it is that speaks to you, what it is that you're going to make meaning out of, what it is that you're going to tap into. And to think that that kind of starts so early for children is kind of amazing to think about. I think there's something about the immediacy of basically they have access to whatever it is they want to watch, whatever it is that they're tapped into at any time. Like, there's no waiting for it. It's immediately available.
Yeah.
And I think that that is something that I'm a little nervous about, I think, is this idea of there's no need to be patient, because why would you be patient when you can just pull up whatever it is that you like on?
The television network doesn't establish boundaries for us, so we establish those boundaries for our kids. So what kinds of boundaries do you guys set?
None. It's the Wild West in my house.
Oh, well, this has been our new thing recently since spring break. So, you know, I think it's more the rewiring of their brain and the immediate pleasure and anticipation of the screen that is probably the most troubling aspect for me in watching her. She was sometimes on the weekends we get a lot more loose, right? On the weekdays, she has half an hour and she can spend it however she wants. She can play Hay Day. She can play Minecraft. She's now discovered, is at the beginning discovery phase of YouTube, or at least kids' YouTube. So she's watching kind of funny My Little Pony videos that somebody else put together, or things like that. And so she can do half an hour with whatever she would like to do. But then on the weekends, sometimes she'll watch it a little longer because mom and dad, frankly, we would like to sleep in a little bit. So she watches it, and I watch when she comes off of it how grumpy she is and how she's just pissed off. And she does this laying about going, there's nothing to do. She like goes boneless all, I have nothing to do. And I'm like, we have a house full of things to do. And granted, she is also an only child, this element of there isn't somebody to go run off and play with, but that the coming down off of it.
Is it just in the morning? Like if she doesn't watch it in the morning and waits till like noon or something, is she different?
Maybe, but then she's hassling me and she's making me get up. So and that just, you know. And it's
no, that, I just, what, for me, when I check my inner, like, email or Facebook first thing in the morning, hmm? I'm, like, kind of addicted to it the rest of the day. Like, I think I get a little shot of dopamine or something, and then all day I'm like, want more? Well, what else is there? What else? Let's check my email again. There's nothing there. But, so I just wondered if she had the same response, you know, like, that'd you get a little TV in the beginning, and then the rest of the day you're just like, ah.
What about you, Stephen? Do you have rules for your kids?
No, we're pretty making it up as we go along. If homework is going badly, and I'm still not comfortable with the idea of homework in kindergarten and first grade, one of them will ask, can they play Prodigy or can they watch a movie? And so occasionally we will give in and say, fine, do your homework and you can do it. Although we do have Friday night is family movie night, in which I pick the movie to enlighten my children about my own childhood. So lately we've had Ghostbusters, E.T., Goonies, things of that sort that won't drive me crazy.
Yeah, we make it up as we go along somehow. Like the morning, there's just this tablet on the table where they can sort of suddenly say, like, I want Elmo or I want whatever it is. But now we're kind of random about like who gets to decide what to watch or whether they get to watch something. Sometimes they don't even ask for it. But a lot of mornings they're watching something. We don't really have rules and it's totally random. And they haven't figured out like that probably there's one child who gets the vote more often than the other, but no one keeps track. But now I'm starting to kind of do, because I've been home with them a lot, feel like 4 o'clock TV time because everyone's really tired at like 3 or 4. Like I want to nap. They're kind of grumpy. So I'm like, let's watch a little bit of a movie.
When I was working at a school with younger children and we started to introduce the iPads in kindergarten and then, you know, trying to kind of figure out what technology we wanted where, the discussion with students about the iPad is not a toy. It's a tool. It's an educational tool. Mm-hmm. And now being at a school where some teachers will have integrated using the kids' cell phones into things that they're doing in class or a poll that they're going to take in class or just the way the transformation that technology can actually make to education, that if you see it as not just a replacement of no paper but a phone, you know, is there a way that you can actually go further than that and really allow the technology to transform how you're teaching and how the students are learning and giving them another avenue?
I find myself with working with children and youth as the director of children and youth ministries is seeing technology as a tool for education, but also as a way of staying relevant. So we have this library in our church. So the church is like 1920s or something when the building was built. So coming up on like 100 years. The library is useless. It's just this room full of books and like microfiche and
and we can't keep the youth off film. The microfiche, they won't stop.
I have cassette tapes, you know, but like no player, you know, it's just sort of stuff like this. And it's like there are resources in this room that basically no one will use, no one will ever use. It's an educational, it's a room devoted to education that doesn't serve the purpose. And so you sort of feel this pressure of, well, then if nothing in this room serves a purpose, unless, you know, like maybe you'll pull a prayer book down to look up something, then why can't this just be a resource room? Why can't we have tablets? Why can't we have computers? And you sort of start to justify, like, we need to bring in technology in order for this, in order for our education to be relevant, in order for it to look like something that the next generation is going to identify as education. And for me anyway, that feels like that involves technology.
Greg, some, you're
like digital technology.
Getting dangerously close to a metaphor for the church.
So. You mean our institutions are like outdated libraries with microfiche?
At times, yes, indeed. We have a long tradition that we like to keep on the shelves.
I like my microfiche.
Stephen, have you all talked about how integrating tech and and things like that at your parish and worship or those sorts of things? Is that conversation happening at a parish level for you?
Slowly it is. And although, you know, we're 20, 25 years behind the edge of culture now. We just redid our website, so it's no longer an archive for every piece of information that every member of the church wants to post. It's now a resource for newcomers and for folks who need access to the schedule. It's clearly targeted at those markets. I have just begun preaching, not just, about 6 months, preaching off an iPad only, so I can record myself a whole lot easier then.
I did preach
a sermon not too long ago about, so Microsoft's operating systems have to be reverse compatible for like 30 years, and we used to call it the long tail of reverse compatibility, and the church is like that. We have this tradition that we look back to often, not often, constantly, which sometimes prevents us from innovating forward.
You're trying to convey, you know, a message that's timeless, and yet you're trying to stay culturally relevant, and it feels like there's kind of a bit of a struggle going on there. So, like, you don't want to be chasing the latest fad. Absolutely. You don't want to be doing that. But at the same time, you don't want to be sort of lost in the times. And when we were saying things like, you know, I just kind of make up this digital parenting, you know, as I go along, like, I feel like that's kind of where our churches are too. We're just kind of making up technology use as we go along and trying to figure out what's the thing that's going to be pertinent and what are the things that we're going to look back 5 years from now and think to ourselves, why in the world did we get one of those? It's just so hard because it feels like it moves really fast.
Where's my common sense media? Like that saves my parenting butt all the time with their reviews of things. And so I can go on their website and get pretty good reviews, like reviews not only from them as professionals, but also from other parents. And like the age rating that kids would give a game versus the age rating that adults would give a game. It's all very interesting. But in ways that it's like, I'm like, okay, well, you can have this Marvel Conquest of Champions if we turn off the networking function. You can't chat with anybody. She's like, that's great. I don't want to. I said, perfect, fine. So having something to kind of run things by, you know, that has been great because the pressure, she is feeling the pressure that everybody is playing X and I don't know what that is, or I want to know what that is, or she wants to go on real YouTube and not kids' YouTube. But I will say, in terms of the worship and technology, this past General Convention, they did away with the big giant blue book that used to be this gigantic binder that had all the legislation in it. And if you're still awake, it's just a big giant binder. So anyway, they did away with it, and everybody was issued an iPad instead. And for the church, who moves really slow on a lot of things, it was super fast, their transition. It worked well, and the amount of trees and paper we saved was incredible. But what I loved about it was worshiping with it. They put all of the bulletins for all of the worship services in a, you know, PDF program on all the iPads. So you could use your issued one. You could also download it onto your phone or another device. And people who had vision issues could make it bigger, and all the music was there. And then you could take it, you could have that app and take those resources home with you if you wanted to use them in your own parish. But it, you know, for, I think even a lot of the older folks were a little nervous about this. It was great. It was really great.
Do you guys take your kids to worship services?
Yeah.
Like, do they participate in the worship service?
Yeah.
Are they generally engaged, or do they have things to distract them?
She will bring, she's lately been in like Calvin and Hobbes and Foxtrot comics. And so she'll bring that with her because I sit in the pew typically on a Sunday morning because I work during the week. And so, but never electronics. She can never take my phone. I don't do that. I always distracted with food when she was little. That was what I always went with. Food and silent toys. Our associate priest has been reading studies about, you know, manipulatives and how you focus when you have a manipulative, and often what we're using is the phone as a manipulative. And so she's been testing kind of silent, quiet manipulatives. This isn't just for the kids, it's also for the adults too. Those of you who are thinking about reaching into your purse to get your phone, you know, just because there's a moment of pause. You know, I've come back from communion And I'll see if someone texted me.
Another person looked at me.
Right.
Look at my phone.
So I'm fascinated by what that summer's going to look like. That'll be interesting.
The cigarettes in the coffee pot may disappear, but I will not. I'll keep my distance, though. There's nowhere else to go. What do? I think of you, or whatever you are open to. And I can't stand to think about the person I'm without. There's something else that I don't want to say unless you want me to. So if you begged and bit and screamed, this is what I'd say to you. I don't want your technology. These computer screens look funny to me. They tilt to the side and they turn upside down. And I'm breathing from under the ground.
Section also. So Steven, where are you? What are you doing right now? And how can people find you on the interwebs?
Okay, I am in my office, in my house.
Okay, we don't need to get that specific, but you're not in Oakland. We know that.
I'm in Alameda, California, at Christ Episcopal Church on the corner of Santa Clara and Grand. I send tweets once every month, and occasionally I update my Instagram.
And where can we find you on the Instagram and the Twitter?
At McHale, McHalesd, at those places. Where else can you find me? I write a kick-ass Christmas letter, but I didn't do it this year because I was busy.
You do write a kick-ass Christmas letter.
Get to know Steven so that you can get the Christmas letter.
It's a really great Christmas
letter. Yeah.
Betsy, where are you? What are you doing? How can people get in touch with you?
I'm a chaplain at the Episcopal High School here in Alexandria, Virginia. And we're almost done with the school year. It's so exciting. Which means I actually reemerge into social media in a different way. You know, I tweet at Betsy_Gons, but super excited. The Olympics are coming, friends. And it's another ripe territory for tweeting. I'm going to be in a more remote location during this time, which worries me. And I know all the people who read my tweets, it worries them too. So we'll see. We'll see what's going to happen. But yeah, summer's coming, so maybe I'll be on social media a little more than I am during school year.
Heather, where are you? What are you doing? And how can people find you on the World Wide Web?
I am in Bennington, Vermont. I teach creative writing and other kinds of writing at Southern Vermont College, a teeny, tiny college here in Bennington. And then I blog at I blog about parenting and disability at starinhereye.wordpress.com.
Wonderful blog.
Thanks.
Let me just say, a wonderful blog.
Holy crap. Such a good blog.
So we wrap up our show, just a really quick segment, small segment, with what we call the 5-minute coffee hour. So picture, if you will, you've just finished preaching this wonderful sermon or listening to a wonderful sermon. Your kids were a dream during the whole service. They absolutely participated and listened faithfully. Everyone is totally impressed with what's going on in your lives. So you show up in your fellowship hall or whatever with your little cup of Maxwell House. What are you going to be talking with the people about? What are some things that have come up for you over the last week that you are going to be referencing over a bagel and a hot cup of coffee? Anything?
I'll be talking about The Bachelorette, which airs tonight, and I can't watch it tonight because we don't have TV, but I'll be watching it tomorrow on Hulu.
Nice.
JoJo, friends. Bachelorette.
No spoilers. No spoilers. No,
don't spoil it. Don't go on Twitter and spoil anything for me, please.
Now, have you kept up with The Bachelorette the whole time that it's been on?
I think I missed a few seasons. I didn't watch the second one, which was a really successful one. It was Trista and Ryan. I missed a couple, but yeah, I've been watching him pretty faithfully since Deanna, which is however many years ago.
I gotta tell you, Bachelor is a blind spot for me, but it makes me excited when I meet a Bachelor fan. I don't know, why.
It creates a whole like subsection of celebrities that I don't know who they are.
Oh yeah,
and it makes me feel old. And also then it feeds into other things because it's ABC, and then I don't watch Dancing with the Stars either. So I find that having those two shows be a blind spot, it means I look at people.com sometimes, and they mention people only by their first names, and I don't know who the hell it is.
I just saw the pilot episode of Preacher.
Oh, yeah. I haven't watched it. What'd you think?
It was intense, man. But it was good. I liked it. It was very supernatural, and it makes me really like it. So there's this pop culture vein that exists where priests or ministers or clergy people are somehow like really cool and doing like cool FBI-ish like level stuff.
Greg, I told you not to talk about the autobiography of my life.
No, I feel like, you know, The Exorcist is kind of like that, right? It's like we need a priest to come in, and it's like, you know, that you show up at the door like, ding dong, I'm the priest, I'm here to help, you know, that kind of thing. So anyway, Preacher's very much that. It's like this, you know, superhero who's also a priest working in Texas, and it's just very fantasy world fun.
I would be talking these days about the fact that my wife and I no longer have a show that we can watch together. We're at a dry spell, and so she's watching whatever crap Heather's watching, and I am, for the second time, watching Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, so good. I could watch with both of the Mikhail Larson.
Come on over.
Just viewing parties.
Right next to you guys and
you
watching
the Battlestar on
one screen and Battlestar on the other.
Yeah, we can watch Game of Thrones together. That's our show that we can watch together. But otherwise, I have become totally addicted, because I've never watched any of it, to Girls, which I am watching, binging on HBO Go at the moment, which is the life that I imagine Heather would have if she was 25 and living in New York and being a writer.
How far are you in?
I am on season 4.
Okay.
Let's see.
It's done, right? Like, they finished.
Oh, I don't know. I don't think so.
No, I don't think it's done. I think it has 5 seasons.
Season 5 is over. Yeah. But I don't think it's over.
I'm like halfway. I'm on episode 5, season 4.
Do you love Adam? Don't you love him?
I do. And you know, and I'm watching it now being like, ooh, it's Kylo Ren. Like,
yeah, right?
About Adam Driver. But
he's so pretty.
He is. He's so pretty, and he's so tall and so awkward and so passionate.
I met Kylo Ren at Disney World.
Did you? Did you?
Yeah. Me and my brother, we met Kylo Ren. We joined the, whatever the Empire is now. I can't remember. Whatever.
What?
He convinced us. He made good arguments. And, not the least of which is that underneath that mask, he's really pretty. And I just want to be a part of whatever he's doing.
Pretty and brooding.
All right. Very good, guys.
Yay!
You can find Poppin' Collars on Twitter, where we will tweet occasionally, at Poppin' Collars. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/poppin'collars, where you can like our page. You can also find each and every one of our shows on our website, poppin'collarspodcast.com. You can also find us on any of your favorite podcasting apps, Stitcher, iTunes, SoundCloud. All we ask is that if you do subscribe to our show, please give us a rating and a review, and we'll crack the top 1,000. Now that we've had Steven on the show, we're bound to crack
come on.
The top 1,000.
He's got a huge
following, a huge Christmas letter following.
They're all adopted dogs.
So we've got to make it now. And also, you can find us on EpiscopalCafe.com, who features our show each and every time. We love EpiscopalCafe.com. We know you will as well. Check them out for all your Episcopal news and beyond. With that, that is Poppin' Collars for this time. Thank you, Heather. Thank you, Betsy. Thank you, Stephen, for coming on the show. We'll see you next time.
Keep those collars popped.